Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Mike Brown from the Investment Analyst Society, and we've been hosted this morning by Grindrod Limited, which I think is a company that we're all well aware of. It's a holding company with freight services, logistics, shipping services, and financial services. Been listed since 1966, I think, so it's a veteran company. Market capitalization, 10 billion odd rand. I think it's on our radar screens as a company that's always reflected a lot of what's going on in the economy. There's some other aspects which hopefully we'll hear from the team of, in terms of their what they're doing with their shipping and perhaps other parts of restructure. But we've always been very well, Grindrod has always done these presentations twice a year to the Analyst Society and to shareholders, stakeholders that are here. And we very much admire that, and we like that because it does give us all a chance to attend a result like this and to get a chance to talk to the entire team of Grindrod that seems to have come up for this presentation. So on behalf of the members, I'd like to thank Grindrod Limited, the team, and to ask Alan to come up and to start the presentation. He'll introduce the rest of the team. Thank you. Mike.
Right, no problem. Ladies, gentlemen, friends, welcome, good morning, and thank you for joining us at the Grindrod Results presentation today. Mark, thanks for that introduction. A special welcome to non-executive directors. We have Zola Malinga. Zola, where are you standing? There you are. Okay. And also to our executive directors on my right, Andrew Waller, Mongewe Ntuli, Martin Wade, and David Parkinghorn. The four of them will be talking to you later about the details of their divisions. In August, let me move on. There we are. In August, we talked about this 100-year-old company and the need for strategic change. Well, today, I give you a lot of that change. And I start with shipping. We've always had a base in Singapore. We're now increasing that base. We've created a separate business. And we've now, in the separate business, appointed a new board. The board will consist of a chairman, Carto Brado. Carto is an ex-Grindrod non-executive director. He's been in shipping all of his life, knows shipping backwards, and he's based on the Isle of Man. We've appointed John Herold, who's ex-South African. He's a lawyer by training, a marine lawyer, lived in London for the last 25 years, and he'll be joining the board as well. And Kwa Van Hout, who's Singaporean. He's a chartered accountant, and he'll be chairman of the audit committee. There'll be a few other directors appointed as the time goes by. And you will have seen from the press this morning, or some of you may have, that we've confirmed our intentions to list this company, the Singapore-based company, with a primary listing on the NASDAQ, inward listed into Johannesburg. And we hope that this will be by June this year, but I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the amount of work that's gone into this over the last 7 months has been incredible. The detail, the backwards and forwards. And I must just at this point thank everybody that's been involved. And I know I've got Ferdy from RMB here. Ferdy, thank you for your special efforts. But everybody, Kim from Deloitte, our own executives, everybody involved. It's been a wonderful process, a long process, a hard process. Here's Steve sitting in front of me. I don't know if he's smiling, but I think he's tired. So we're very pleased that we can announce this today. As I said, it's been 7 months, but we only got the green light on Friday last week to be able to talk about the NASDAQ. Now, why the NASDAQ? In fact, somebody just now asked me if I could please explain. We've looked at them all. Obviously, the JSE, that's our Grindrod Limited listing. We've looked at Singapore, Hong Kong, London, Oslo. But it was absolutely clear that the two American exchanges, New York and NASDAQ, were the places to be. They were the choices that we had to go to. And we all know shipping is a very specialized business. It was the Greeks many, many years ago that were the main players in this. But it's not the day-to-day business. You see the trends. I don't know if there's any business in the world that would have gone through the dip that we've seen in shipping rates over the last number of years. Fortunately, and I'll be positive, over the last, or since 2016, the rates have increased threefold. And that sounds wonderful. But just to give you, for those of you that don't remember all the details, and if I use one example of a Supramax going back to 2007, the rates per day were $72,000. In 2016, it was $3,300. From $72,000 to just over $3,000. I don't know if there's any business in the world that can survive with a revenue stream that's affected like that. There are 23 businesses that we've counted, shipping businesses that we've counted, that have failed. Fortunately, Grindrod Shipping has stayed alive, and we now see this wonderful future with the rates improving into that future. So that's why we chose NASDAQ. It was our choice. We'll be measured against our peers, and that's probably the biggest issue. If we look at London, there are very few shipping companies on that exchange. So on the NASDAQ, we've got competition. Martin Wade has always been telling us that Grindrod Shipping has a blue chip name, and I think this is going to be a test for us. So as I said, importantly, the markets are improving, the rates are three times higher than they were, and we're now at profitable levels. I don't want to talk too much more about the detail because Martin's got his little session later and he'll give you a lot more detail. So just to finish with that, I can say to you that Grindrod is excited about the change. We think it'll be a wonderful move in the right direction, and we look forward to the next year and we look forward to the listing in June. If I move now to freight services. Thank you. You're all aware that last year we were planning to exit the rail locomotive and rail construction businesses, and I'm pleased to say that they're now out of the system. One was sold and the other was closed down, but this division now remains with ports, terminals, logistics, and some rail operations, but relatively small. And over time, we expect and hope to bulk up this division. Again, markets are helping us, and Bongiwe and Tuli will give you the details in the next session. Moving to Grindrod Bank, you'll see from David's presentations, and David gives these presentations every year with the graphs that keep going up. Fortunately, those graphs continue. But this year has been taken up by SASSA issues. All of you are aware that Grindrod Bank is the bank behind the SASSA payments. The principle within Grindrod is that we will support change. We're engaging with SASSA, with Treasury, with the expert panel that are advising the Constitutional Court, and many others. And we think that all those parties understand the positive contribution that Grindrod Bank has made to the SASSA payment system over the last number of years. We paid on time every month for the last 6 years. But just to summarize, we are in this process here to support South Africa in the change that has to happen in the SASSA payment system. And now for some numbers. Before I get onto that, the business environment. There's only one that I'd like to highlight, and that's the line at the bottom, where it talks about commodity demand at more sustainable levels. And we're very fortunate that after many years of difficult trading, where every part of Grindrod was negatively affected. We talked about shipping rates that I talked about earlier. We talked about coal rates. We talked about iron ore. We talked about the drought because of our investments in agri. Every one of them were almost at all-time lows in 2016. They're all moving in the right direction. Thank you. Thanks. Again, moving now onto the slide that I talked about, we've had to, in our numbers, show continuing operations and discontinued operations. And the discontinued operations, although technically when we do the spin-off of shipping, on day one, the shareholders in Grindrod Limited will be the same shareholders in Grindrod Shipping Limited, the NASDAQ JSE company. We've had to show them from a technical point of view as discontinued operations. So the continued operations we have, that you see up here on my left, is effectively freight services and financial services, with the discontinued being the locomotives that I talked about and shipping. And obviously positive numbers that you see coming up here, I'd just like to highlight maybe the second and the third lines, EBITDA inclusive of joint ventures of 45% and headline earnings 173%. Next one. This is the performance of the discontinued operations, the shipping, if I look at that, and you'll see there's still the loss, but I'm going to leave the details to Andrew to talk about. We've had to write down ship values to effectively market values in terms of this process, and I won't go into that detail at this point of time. But we're very comfortable that we end up with a business that's positively moving into the future. We have no gearing. Sadly, this year we will not be have not declared a dividend, but hopefully in the not too distant future that will change. So with that overview, I'm going to hand over now to Andrew, who will give us some financial numbers. Thanks, Andrew.
What we've got here is the management income statement for continuing operations. Management income statement because we have a number of joint ventures. And what we've done is we pulled the joint ventures out and showed the full income statement for those. You see the revenue, a good uplift. Quite a lot of that uplift is from the bunker fuels business, Cockett, which brings quite a lot of quite a big proportion of that revenue. If you look in the segment analysis, you'll see that split. The trading profit also up. Obviously, improved terminals utilization. The bunker fuels business, you'll remember we took a couple of big hits last year. That's come right a long way. And, of course, all the cost reductions that have been going on for a number of years in the freight businesses. Depreciation and amortization only different because of the decline in the average exchange rate. The non-trading item this year is a credit, and you saw that at the half year. That's essentially an accounting entry because of the buy-up that we did in NLPI. There's a foreign currency credit that comes to the income statement there. The share of profits from associates, that's essentially mainly the agri business, and that's obviously the improved agri profits given the drought is over. And that's what gives us the profit attributable to ordinary shareholders of 674 versus the 226 in the prior year. This is now just looking at that headline profit by segment. Again, continuing operations. Very difficult to see that light colour, but the ports and terminals up from 94 to 194, good increase. Logistics up from 57 to 82, good increase. And the financial services, again, up 171 to 189, good increases. Those are the normal increases. The ones that I wanted to highlight to you were the marine fuels and agri. You'll remember in the prior year in Cockett, we had the closure of that big lease that we had in the Thames, and we also had a big impairment of one of the debtors. Those are two very large numbers that we had in the last year. And of course, the other is the big movement change in agri, increase of 50 million profit in the two comparisons over the two periods. And the other one in group, in the prior year, we had a credit from a revaluation credit essentially on our UK property, which sits in the bank. And that was the largest item in there, which didn't recur in the current year. So headline profit from the continuing operations, 598, up from 290. And that's the improvements of a lot of these businesses and a little bit of SA economy coming through. If we then look at the discontinued operation, and this takes a little bit of analysis, so when you send these your questions afterwards, I'll spend a bit of time on this. But really, the only ones I want to look at now are, if you look at the shipping trading result, you'll see it's 223 from a loss of 5. Now, that's reflective of those improved rates. If we stay with the shipping line for now and go down to the depreciation shipping, you see it's 285 versus 447. That decrease is largely because of an impairment we took in September, and secondly because when you, from the moment you call it discontinued, the depreciation now sits in the non-trading item line. So if you then go to non-trading items and you see the shipping line of 719, that's essentially where we've now booked the 620 million impairment, which is largely ships and a little bit of goodwill, in order to place the shipping business in a position that we believe it's at the right value and it'll grow from here. As I said, that also then adds the depreciation. So it's a 620 plus the depreciation that came out of the shipping line under the depreciation box. So those are the shipping numbers. The other is in rail, and if you drop down to the not trading item line, there's the 248 on rail. And that's essentially the final loss that we took when we were auctioning off those locos. You remember we tried to get a sale through of the locomotive business. We were at the 11th hour when the party wasn't able to complete. And that essentially was mostly the crystallization of the losses from that transaction. What we had done in the prior year, which is the oddity that I've flagged for you on the slide, in the prior year we had booked a 650 million impairment for that locomotive assembly business. You see it there on the right-hand side. But because we weren't able to conclude the sale, and we had to then write off the assets through our books, we couldn't take it through the non-trading item line. And that's why we've been required to book the 651 at the top, and then it reverses out to the bottom. It doesn't affect the bottom line number at all. So essentially, your loss from the discontinued operations, 1.2, 900 of which is shipping, 600 is the impairment, and then rail of 348. I know I'll get a lot of questions on that as the weeks go by. Obviously, as you'd expect, the big move in the balance sheet is essentially the shipping coming out. You see the top five or so lines, no real movements, and then you'll see the 7004, that drops down into the non-current assets held for sale line, and you'll see there's shipping 7151. And if you deduct on the liability side the 3294, you get the net number, which at round about the $13 gives you the $320 million number that we're going to list the shipping business at. Only other number I need to draw your attention to is the shareholders' equity, down from 15.8 to 14.2. That's obviously the loss and some foreign exchange that goes against us because the rand strengthened. The net debt analysis, or my cash slide, and as you can imagine, over this period, 2015, 16, 17, we've been focused heavily on the cash. 373 was the debt going into the year, and we finished off with nothing. See 7 on the right-hand side. 689 million generated from the continuing businesses, that's Bongiwe and Dave. And the 130 is the shipping business actually generated 85-odd million. And then rail, 216 cash outflow. Interest and dividends of the 76. We invested in dry bulk businesses, in trucks, some handling, and we bought up in NLPI, and that makes the 389. The bank made investments, which is the 223. We lent some money to our Richards Bay business, that's the 22. And the proceeds that you see there are where we've sold some old ships, 240 odd million, and sold some assets, and of course the auction proceeds that come into that 516. That's how the net debt looks. Now if I could just hand over to Bongiwe for the freight.
Thanks, Andrew. Will you control the for me? Thanks. It's very pleasing, ladies and gentlemen, to stand here in front of you today with much better results than last year. I think the past 2 years have been difficult for us on the freight services side, but on the back of the improved commodity pricing and a lot of work that my team has done over the past 2 years working with all logistics and resource providers, it is pleasing to stand and report the improved results. I'll start with the Maputo port and the Maputo terminal. I think you're all aware that we dredged the port last year from 11 meter depth to 14.2 meters. which has enabled larger full Panamax vessels to be loaded at full capacity at our ports, which avoids double port calls for a lot of our commodity traders. We load vessels now in Maputo. I think we've increased our vessel load rates by about 40%, and at the Maputo, at the Matola terminal, following the dredge as well and the bed offset projects that we did, are loading 55% more than the prior years, which again, as I say, avoids double port calls and obviously then reduces the logistics cost for all our commodity traders. Those two projects were completed quite successfully on time, on budget, and I think by the end of the year, during August or September last year, the Matola terminal handled a 96,000 ton post-Panamax vessel, which again was quite pleasing. As a result, TCM, which is our large coal terminal with an installed capacity of 7.2 million tons, handled 5.2 million tons, which is a record volume, up 37% when compared to last year. Thank you. In South Africa, in our Richards Bay terminal, which I think you all know, we have both a coal terminal and other dry bulk facilities there. Coal volumes were up 6% on prior year. Still very short of a full capacity utilization. I think we handled only or utilized our capacity by up to 57%. We continue to work with Transnet and all the shipping lines and obviously the junior miners to ensure that we are fully use the installed capacity. Again, I think for 2018 we're looking quite good with volumes of about 2.3 million tons already signed up for 2018. Is a much better improvement on 2017. On the liquid side, we had some successful projects that actually have been commissioned already. One was the Durban tank site, where we converted some tank facilities for a key client, and that project was completed successfully and fully commissioned. In Cape Town, we started major construction there of about 10,000 cubes for our veg oil customer, and the process has started and with full board approval, and I think we should be done in the next 15 months with fully installed capacity of, again, an additional 10 to 15,000 cubes. The Kucha liquid tank facility, I think we are all aware, we signed the boot agreement finally with Transnet last year, which is pleasing, and we've started our customer engagement and feasibility studies continue. There is currently installed capacity at Kucha of about 60,000 to 80,000 tons, so probably as first phase we'll look at relocating that existing capacity and then adding up as we go along, subject to obviously customer commitment and fundability of the project. Few operational highlights on the logistics side. We announced our the win of our Syra graphics logistic contract with a miner in the province. We've started that facility. We're handling by the end of the year, we've loaded a few of the graphite handled by our ship agency business, and we continue to then construct our cross-docking facility, which obviously will be managed by us at the Natala port. On the ship agency side and the clearing forwarding side, subdued trading conditions, obviously, because we're very much susceptible to what is happening in South Africa and the growth of the country. However, volumes and profit held when compared to prior years. A lot of work was done by us and our management on the carrier and intermodal side over the past 2-3 years. A lot of cost-cutting, consolidation of site, and really, really reconfiguring our operational model, and definitely has yielding positive benefits this year, which is, again, quite pleasing. Our coastal feeder business showed improved results, and largely by us extending our activities on the land side, where we've leased two further facilities on Durban Port, and they're handling more containers and doing some distribution services for a key client in Durban. On the rail corridor side, we report again improved volumes on the north-south corridor, driven by the demand from the Central Copper Belt and the great support we've received from Transnet on the rail side and obviously on the Zambian government side. And further, the Zambian government late last year approved a special instrument which almost forces all miners on the copper belt to move at least 80% of their output by rail rather than on road, which is a great milestone and will definitely make this corridor viable and sustainable going forward. We hope. I see Andrew here raising you of little faith. High levels of utilization was achieved on our locomotive leased business on the back of all the activity that is happening on the North-South Corridor, and it includes volumes on our sites. I think by the end of the year, almost all our leased fleet were fully deployed on our corridors and obviously with some customers. The rail assets held for sale, which obviously is this leasing business, fully deployed and obviously subject to sale in line with our rail exit strategy that we announced a few years back. The winding of the locomotive assembly business was quite painful, but it was successfully completed by the end of last year. Again, which is a great achievement from my team. Looking now forward, I think we continue to see sustained volumes, sustained support from our rail resource providers. Commodity prices seem to have stabilized. We are fully contracted in most of our facilities. I think last year when I stood in front of the analyst at the beginning of the year, we were probably 40-50% contracted. This year for 2018-2019, we're over 80% contracted in our facilities and handling at times a lot of also spot cargoes. The rates have improved in line with the improvement in commodity pricing. I think we announced our commodity price participation strategy with our customers. And obviously the efficiencies that the shipping lines and the commodity traders are enjoying in our facilities make us believe that going forward we definitely will be able to utilize all the installed capacity in Maputo. And obviously Richards Bay remains an issue of focus for us as we work with the junior miners. On the North-South Corridor, I think I've talked about the special instrument that was passed. We see continual improvement in volumes. Yeah, and Natala remains an area of focus for us. We'll finish our facility that we're building there, which is about 10,000 square meters or 52,000 square meters under roof by May this year. And hopefully presence by us being present there will result in a lot of more other opportunities in the Natala airport. I think that's it really from my side. I'll hand over to Martin. I've got Xolani Mbambo here, the Freight Services Director, for any further questions as well later on numbers and et cetera. Thank you.
Thank you, Bongiwe. Morning, everyone. Exciting times and a great opportunity. I always smile, I'm always an optimist, but this is what we've been through in the last 7 months, as Mike said, is a huge amount of work to get to this position, and it's very, very exciting. So quickly to run through 17, a better year, especially with Q4, where we turned positive. But as Mike said, when you can think that 2016 was the worst ever dry cargo market, 2015 the third worst ever, 2012 the fifth worst ever, we've come off a hellish time. So yes, from a low base, but the rates are now, as we see at the bottom, the averages are up strongly and things are looking far more positive. Tanker-wise, not so good. It's a tough market, almost where dry cargo was maybe 18 months ago. Too many ships. There is demand out there, but the world oil markets are changing. America exporting oil. So everyone's having to adapt. This will change predominantly when we get through the order book towards the end of this year. And also, as I'll come to it, with changes in emissions from 2020 is going to change the market dramatically. Ship operating businesses, yeah, that's our cargo side. Margins obviously come under pressure where the rates rise. We pay more for ships, but as it's part of our own ship owning side as well, we're handling it. The margins are still there, but naturally we make more on our ships and not so much on our cargo. During the fleet movement, we took delivery of one Ultramax, the 60, back in January of last year, and we sold three old tankers and two old Handys. Again, the rationale for that is we want to keep a modern fleet. New regulations coming in, it is important that we have a very modern economic fleet, so it all fits into our plan. And so Mike has got the figures on the bottom. It's Yeah, I think if any other market, if the Dow Jones had collapsed from whatever it was at the time, 15,000 down to 400, we'd have had people jumping out of windows. Someone asked me what we did, and I said, to be honest, we just went out for lunch. There's not a lot else we could do. Listing. To say, exciting. We're doing it slightly differently in terms of, it's a Singapore holdco. So we're not doing Marshall Islands, we're not doing a brass plate, we're doing a genuine holding company in Singapore, 58 people in Singapore, growing, full support of the Singapore government. And I think this is where the future is going to be. I think you have to have credibility. And on that basis, with the with the Grindrod legendary Transparency Integrity Trust, this is what we're going to try and sell to the market. There's no hidden management companies inside. We are completely transparent and try and do it properly and become a benchmark. It is hugely complex, three jurisdictions. As our New York lawyer said, this is a spin-off on steroids, which it has been, hence all the hard work. In terms of strategy, very much retain the focus. The secret of shipping is you've got to be concentrated on what you're good at. So for us, Handy, Supramax in the dry side, and MR tankers on the tanker side. To be a jack of all trades, I see no point. I think let's keep to what we're good at, where we have the relationships, and what we know. Consolidation within the sectors, we're already receiving offers from people interested in maybe partnering us. Who knows, maybe people will sell ships for shares. We're getting attention. But again, our focus is very much on the dry side, Japanese only, on the tanker side, Korean only. We want quality, and whatever we do has to be a cultural fit as well. Very, very important for us. No point in fighting. We will consider an equity raise after listing. That's one of the attractions of what we're doing. If there's the right opportunity out there, which we think there will be, we think we are going to attract attention. I think as the bankers say, you can be a diner or dinner, and I think our plan is to be a diner, not the dinner. And we'll further expand the fleet on the Handy size through our Japanese relationships, who are very keen on partnering us and doing more business with us. Outlook. The dry bulk fleet, yes, as you come to the appendices, there's no Manhattans. The Manhattans have gone, and that is so positive. Sadly, not quite the same for the tankers, but that order book for the next few years can't change. When you add into that the new regulations coming in with ballast water, as in the past Alan talked about, where you have to retrofit ships to pump out clean water, that's a cost for us. It's already factored in for a lot of owners. Some ships probably they won't be able to afford it. The important one is on the 1st of January 2020, low emission regulations come in. So you have to burn, you either have to have a scrubber, which the wildest estimate, there might be, of the 55,000 ocean-going ships, there might be 500 or 600 with a scrubber, which will be the big container ships and cruise ships, or you burn low sulfur or gas oil, which will cost more, and this for us is a huge advantage because we have a modern fleet and our consumption is lower than them ships built elsewhere in the world. So this is a potential game changer and will also force a lot of older ships to potentially be scrapped. So dry bulk, looking positive. That order book is looking good. Genuine demand, China, coal, iron ore, grain. And what's also important for China is they announced a couple of weeks ago that they're now creating a program of houses for rent. They're going to do what the Western world does, which they've never done before, because people can't afford, so the government's going to build. They're talking about between $1 and $2 trillion worth of investment. It's staggering. But for that, that's coal, iron ore, to produce steel, timber, cement. It's brilliant. And of course, they still have their one belt, one road. So there's a lot of genuine demand out there, and the world generally seems to be subject to one or two people. The trade, the Trump, I don't think, there was a trade war back in 2002, 2004, George Bush on steel. It fizzled out. It doesn't work. So I think China and America are rational enough, pragmatic, to realize. Ship operating, yeah, they'll continue to be under pressure. But as I say, we combine it with our own fleet, and where we're coming from is that we operate the ships ourselves, which is distinctly different to a lot of our competitors. So, yeah, exciting times. Thank you.
Dennis, morning everybody, and this year is far more difficult for me. In the last couple of years, I've been able to stand up here and be the the exciting part of the presentation, making profits and showing growth. This year we're just boring. But I make no apologies for that. We're in the banking business and that's what we need to be. So again, you can see consistent and stable growth. We do run a conservative business. The one slide that's not on here, which probably is relevant, is our return on capital. And that we've been in the last 4 to 5 years between the 18% and 20% consistently. So that's how we aim to run our business, to make sure that we're giving a consistent and decent return on our capital. The other point to make is on that top right hand slide, which you won't see the light gray there, but our deposit base and funding above 8 billion, so an ever-increasing gap, which obviously translates into conservative liquidity management. From an operational point of view, some of the issues to point out, Mike mentioned, you know, the SASSA grant payments. Clearly, it's critical that continues. There's every week there's some change or some new prospect as to how that's going to be done or not done, and somebody else promising they can do all sorts of things. In the meantime, we're just carrying on paying. There has been an extension to that contract in the short term. We haven't seen the conditions of it yet, but our view is just to keep paying and make sure that the beneficiaries get their money. From a UK property performance, important in this portfolio, it's a £240 million portfolio, so it's not insignificant. We own 30% of that. The key there is that it's in logistics and distribution centres, so there's been no negative impact from a Brexit perspective in terms of value. In fact, significant value uplift this year came about from really three properties. One was a sale, so that's a realization and crystallization of an uplift. And then two developments, which were at land value in our portfolio and have been developed and let on 10 and 15-year leases, respectively, to blue-chip tenants. So that's the real uplift that came. And again, as Andrew mentioned, no currency movement this year. In fact, it was almost identical year on year from a currency perspective. So no benefit or negative from a currency perspective. The asset management portfolios, we did split at the beginning of the year into two separately branded entities, Bridge Fund Managers, which focuses on the active management side, and then through Core Shares, we look at the index and passive business. And Mike, again, always nice to have you in here. Mike's a very firm supporter and clearly protagonist of the ETF space, so great to have you with us, Mike. If we move on to some of the activities, again, we want to keep it consistent in terms of our business, focus on what we do and do well. The one thing, and we've had it on here for a while, we're still looking to do a meaningful BEE transaction, but again, that must be value accretive and value adding, so it's not something we've rushed in just to tick a box. From an outlook perspective, clearly the third bullet point has been staved off for a while. The credit rating looks like we're stable for a while, or certainly for now, but it does impact us to the extent we have cost of funding impact. And then the improved confidence at this stage, we're feeling it. It hasn't necessarily translated into actual earnings throughout the economy yet, but certainly in our private equity portfolio businesses, we anticipate that the improved outlook, the improved confidence will start translating into value accretion and earnings accretion through those entities. So far more confidence about investing in the SA economy and motivate and helping those businesses to grow than we might have been a year or so ago.
Right. We're now onto the last slide and the last part of the presentation. There are four items there which really show a very much more positive outlook. And I hope that you will all agree that we're in a much better position today than we were a year ago. And I hope that this time next year,
both businesses, Grindrod Shipping and Grindrod Limited, will produce even better results. So it's been a year of substantial change. Still a bit more to come, but I think that's where we are. Very much better position in comparison to previous years. So we're now in a position to take on questions. I think we may have somebody on the phone, but anybody on the phone yet? Okay. Any questions from the floor for any one of the five of us? Yeah.
Thanks. It's Myron from Metal Industries. A couple of questions if I can, right? So firstly, just to talk about, I think for Bungie Wage, just the terminal utilization you said is in 2018 is 80%. And then you mentioned for 2019 as well, it's similar numbers. Can I assume it's 80% as well, or is it somewhere there?
Yeah.
Where are we at the moment? I mean, is it still too early to give a specific figure for what you expect for 2019?
You can hear me? For 2019, what contracted currently is about 80% as well. Yeah.
Thank you. And these?
Both the combination of iron ore and coal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. And the second question is to Martin. I've got a couple of questions on the listing of the shipping business. Your fleet is only Japanese on the dry bulk, as you mentioned. But your listed peers have a mixture of Japanese, Chinese, and various others, right? Can you give us a sense of, to the extent that you can, what sort of premium do these Japanese ships, because I remember in the past as well, Alan has talked about the premium Japanese sort of shipping ships, right? So what sort of premiums do these Japanese ships trade compared to their comparators for similar type of ships?
Something that can tell us.
I've got to be careful what I say. I might get sued.
The thing about Japanese ships is that they perform from a speed and consumption point of view. So our modern ships, we say, on the 58s to 60s, will do 14 knots on 28 tons per day. The comparable Chinese ones will be doing 14 on 33, the old ones 14 on 38. So there's a 5 to 10 ton difference there. So when you're talking about a fuel cost at the moment of $350, that's the media where our premium comes in. We go forward to 2020, where heavy fuel oil, the cheap stuff, will be basically banned. You've got to burn a higher quality, which will cost more. And as you go all those years when we first invested in it, and Alan used to go on about eco, remember, as this happened, the oil price then halved, and the eco effect dropped. We now see it coming back. So there's a very real advantage that modern ships will have. Yes, I mean, Chinese ships are getting better and better, but it's the Japanese that have the edge on design and performance. And the fortunate thing is not everyone can order in Japan. It's an old-fashioned nation. You have to earn the right to order ships there, and that's what we covered. So potential is huge. In terms of resale values, as we've seen in the market, between 25-30% differential between second-hand Chinese and second-hand Japanese. So it's quite huge.
So when we look at peers that are listed in the NASDAQ, we need to obviously have a premium for these Japanese sort of businesses. Is that the sort of premium that we're seeing at the moment on the listed comparables?
In terms of values, our values are very easily pegged because we have Japanese bulkers and Korean tankers. A lot of our competitors, some have a mixture. One has a mixture of Chinese and Japanese. A lot of them are purely Chinese, and that's where we see our advantage will be. Also, in an appreciating market, the value of Japanese ships do tend to rise quicker than other countries.
And one last question on the shipping side. So this new legislation that comes on the 1st of January 2020,
yeah.
It means you have to either scrub or you have to use gas oil, right? And most of the shipping businesses are going with gas oil. And
yeah, there's 55,000 ocean-going ships. So to retrofit or it's the wildest optimistic is maybe 800 ships will have scrubbers by then. So the rest of the fleet will have to burn low sulfur or gas oil.
And just to clarify what you said earlier, it sounded like the Japanese types of ships are much more efficient than a lot more efficient than the comparable type of Chinese or other ships. so that you have actually get a cost advantage.
Yeah, in terms of the consumption, should we say if we're, let's be conservative, 5 tons more economic, and the price of the fuel is $500 a ton, it's $2,500, you're steaming 200 days a year, that's $2,000. If the differential goes up to $600 or $700 a ton, then it's huge. So a big advantage, and it'll probably cause issues for older ships who won't be able to trade long haul voyages because they'll just be too uneconomic.
Okay, thank you. And the last question is for the financial side. Can you give us any color on the asset growth on the core share side of things? What sort of year on year asset growth did you see?
So 35% growth in AUM, but it's off such a low base. You know, we've just gone through $3 billion in assets there. But you would anticipate, with the market being so fledgling, and it needs to grow at those levels to really pick up.
Do you see the pressure on pricing that we see in international markets? Is it as severe as it's been?
It is, and there's almost a race to the bottom in terms of the vanilla index products. So you're going to see quite a lot of thinking around smart beta and discussion there to try and retain a little bit of margin in that space. But there's no doubt that there's going to be a competition on the vanilla products down to as low as possible.
Okay, next question. I know there's one over here, please. Sorry, over there. Sorry, I'll get back to you now.
Thank you. Just quickly on the shipping side, and then I've got a question on ports and terminals as well. If you look at the ballast water treatment as well as the sulfur cap, what is the risk that the enforcement might be delayed? Because if you think about the complexity of measuring these things, you actually need people or officers to do that. So if you can just share some of your thoughts. And then for Bongi, I seem to recall a 3.5 million ton that you noted last year would be filled at RBT. So you've now said that we're looking at 2.2 to 2.3 for 2018. What is the issue here? Why hasn't that been filled? Is it Transnet or maybe something else? Thank you.
Interesting question, yes, because ballast water was first put on the for the IMO back in 1987. Mm. So it took 30 years for it to become law. By which time, Sweden is quite happy to have Japanese oysters off its coast. It's happened. It's too late. But the ballast water now is written in stone. It has to happen next year, so that's inevitable. If not, you can't trade America, and even with exemptions. The countries are getting tighter and tighter on this, thankfully, at last. On the low sulfur, yes, interesting one. There are people betting that. But the next IMO meeting is in April, next month. And this isn't even hasn't even been tabled on the agenda. So the people that would like to see it postponed, if that hasn't been even tabled, it'll take many, many months. And to be blunt, ballast water, fine, oysters, yes, this kills people. Yeah? We have to do something about this. So we don't think this is going to get pushed back. This has to come in. In terms of compliance, what is already happening in Rotterdam, Singapore, off Scandinavia, is they're flying drones. In Singapore, the biggest bunkering anchorage in the world. They fly drones over every aircraft, taking every ship, taking samples, and then they go back and you'll get done. So the compliance is there in terms of, yes, the theory is as soon as you steam 20 miles out, let's burn whatever we want. Norway's actually said it might introduce rules where you can't even have heavy fuel on board, irrespective. So the world is going to tighten up on this, so we're assuming compliance, purely because it's air kills. Something has to be done to clean up the industry.
Okay. Okay, thanks Christina for your questions. On the Richards Bay, it's quite a complex corridor, unlike Maputo, where we handle the rail all the way to Matola and load the vessels on ship. Our Richards Bay Navitrade facility, I always say we're like ham in a sandwich. So Transnet does the loading of the ships, and obviously they bring the resources on the rail side. For example, this year or 2017, we're almost at about 2.2, 2.3 million contracted, but due to bad weather, a lot of other factors at mine site, as well, remember we're dealing with junior miners, you know, they get impacted with bad weather, et cetera, et cetera, stoppages at mines. We only were able to get to 1.8 million tons. For 2018,
we are contracted at, I think, at least 2.6 million tons, which is the highest ever. You know, I could actually say we probably will handle 2.9, touch wood, but to date we contracted about 2.6 million tons. But again, subject to rail resource availability, bad weather, you know, average delays in Richards Bay last year, and Martin can correct me, especially at the start of the year, January and February, and also around December, were about 20 to 25 days delay. So, which means that you can't load a ship, which then, obviously, we only record tonnage or recognize revenue on the loading on the vessel. You know, so there's all those complications that impact our facility, you know. But on a good day, good weather, we think we've got enough resources supported by Transnet of probably 3 million tons. We've got installed capacity of about 3.3 tons. The guys always argue with me that it's 3.2, Bongo, it's not 3.5. But I always say, depending on how you turn around the stockpiles and run the operation more efficiently, we probably have 3.5 million tons. Yeah. But subject to a whole lot of other factors, we're dependent on the incoming rail, we're depending obviously on the berth capacity and berth loads, and they are impacted then further by a whole lot of other factors.
Okay, thank you. Dania, please.
Yeah, thank you. A couple of questions. For me, should I give them to you when it's time or everything at once?
All at once. Yeah,
have a go. Okay. Question number one, what will Grindrod own in terms of the new shipping entity, if they are owners at all? Second of all, what does that mean to the Grindrod balance sheet? Presumably there will be some sort of cash inflow, if you could quantify that. Then, if I might throw a curveball at you, if we look at the Grindrod 18 months or 2 years ahead, will we see the same operating structure as we've seen after the shipping listing? Are we going to see Grindrod break up into further parts sold or joint ventures being done? And then lastly, just a question for David there. Just having a look at the whole SASA scenario, going ahead, is there any chance that we might see a joint venture in terms of payments? I believe you guys have got something like 10 million cards or more due to the state not being able to process, to implement, etc. Would they perhaps bring the private sector in like you guys as a possibility?
So, end of my question.
Okay.
Fine. Do you want to take the SASA first?
Should I start with that?
Yeah.
Ron, yes. There's a lot of discussion taking place, and there are different industry bodies all looking at various solutions. So the one key solution that is being looked at from the banking industry per se is to say, have an open account basis, so the beneficiaries can choose whichever bank they want, and effectively what that would mean is no contract with SASA, so there wouldn't be a guillotine coming in terms of a process that every 5 years they have the same problem of going out to tender again. The complication with that is dealing with 10 million people, change for them, communication for them, change in deliverables, what it means. So potentially from our perspective, that's a positive outcome in the sense that we start with 10 million accounts they're ours to lose. That is probably as best as I can say now. In the meantime, we're working with all the parties to see what is the best solution.
Ron, if I can then comment on your third question, I'll leave Andrew to answer the first and second. Your question about the future, obviously, it's not 100% certain, but we have talked about bulking up. I mentioned earlier, freight services, the intention will be to bulk up that business. Outside of that, it's too early to comment.
I think to the question on Grindrod and the unbundling, essentially what will happen is Grindrod, the company, will not own any shares. It'll own the shares that our treasury owns. But the intention is not for Grindrod to own any shares in shipping. The shareholders of Grindrod will have shares in Grindrod, and they'll have shares in Grindrod shipping. And the way we get that is through this quite complicated method, thanks to RMB, with convertible notes and then a dividend So essentially you'll see a dividend of the $320 million we talk about. That'll be a dividend in the 2018 results. Okay. So remember, the problem that we've had for the last 3 years, that all the shareholders and ourselves have been saying we've got a balance sheet that's 20 Rand and a share price that's 11 Rand. There's something wrong. And of course, we've been saying it's mining commodities, shipping rates, everything not working. When the time is right, we need to pull those apart and have them separately measured. And that's essentially what you'll see with this balance sheet now. We pull out the 7 billion rands of shipping assets and their debt with it, the 3.2, and that's your $320 million. And that'll be measured separately alongside all of its peers for current Grindrod shareholders who obviously can decide to sell the share or buy more. We hope buy more. We could easily have sold it to someone, but we don't believe selling shipping at $320 million is a very clever idea. We would rather our shareholders hold that share while the cycle runs. Correct. So essentially, you will get a convertible note, but 1 second later, it'll turn into a share in Grindrod Shipping. Technically, it's a dividend. And the financial advisors must help you with your base cost, because I think you'll find that you have a very beneficial base cost. That's a good question that I'll need to research.
Freddie, do you want to comment?
Dividend withholdings tax.
If you are going to distribute it as a dividend and not as an unbundling, how do you handle the dividend withholding tax?
There would be any dividend withholding tax, because the dividend to the company is obviously about tax free, because it comes to the company, and the dividend to the individual would comprise a return of share capital, and on that there's also not a dividend withholding tax. So the dividend that you're going to receive is effectively free of dividend withholding tax.
Thanks, Freddie. Well done.
Does that answer the question?
Okay.
Roy, are you happy? Ray, you answer the questions answered? Otherwise, I can spend a bit more time on it afterwards.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Should it come about that Grindrod were to be excluded completely from any involvement with SASSA payments, there would obviously be an immediate effect being a fall in revenue. What other adverse effects would result?
Country might
Kevin?
We obviously get some deposits that sit at month end, but we don't count those in our liquidity at all. So while it technically would reduce the year-end balance sheet, because there's quite a big number of year-end deposits that are SASSA deposits, so we'd have a reduction in that balance sheet, but it wouldn't have any material impact from the way we run our business, as you say, other than an income base.
Would you, for instance, be required or forced to lay off any staff?
Unlikely. We'd have to look at the efficiency of that retail business and what other new revenue streams we could get in there. But we wouldn't. We're in a growth phase, so we're not looking at trying to reduce our business, and we've got enough to absorb whatever we've got.
Thank you.
Any questions on the telephone?
Yes. There are no questions on the line.
Okay, if I could just ask a question on the dividend withholding tax. I think that's quite a critical issue, and you may well find that because you're doing in specie distribution of capital rather than dividends, that you might get around the dividend withholding tax, but you'd have an STT implication because you're now issuing a different security. But that's clearly something that question should be answered, and I think it would be quite interesting.
Could I just ask another question, just in terms of capital expenditure? I mean, this group spent quite a bit of money on capital over the years, and if we park shipping, because that's going to go through its new process, is there still going to be quite big capex in the freight services, logistics, and I see the financial services business has also spent quite a bit of capital in recent years. Could you just give us some idea of next year's capital expenditure and how you'd fund it? I mean, clearly you've now, your net debt position is very favorable now. Perhaps just give us some idea how you would be looking to fund your future capital expenditure, if it's substantial.
Thank you, Mark. Andrew, do you want to comment? So in the numbers that were sent out this morning, you'll see there's very limited capex that's been approved. There are obviously a number of capital projects in discussion that haven't got approval yet. But to your question about whether we're going to be an asset light or asset heavy, Grindrod has always been focused on having some infrastructure as the core to which you then grow the operating services around. Do you want to add to that for me?
Yes, I think you're quite right, Andrew. I think we always have had an intention of always showing skin in the game, you know, and working with our customers to provide, obviously, sustainable relationships and then build our operations around our infrastructure component, you know, and the services around that.
And Mike, it does come back to the comment I made earlier about bulking up, and that is very much an issue.
When the analysts speak to us about our business, they refer to Maputo and the work we do in Maputo. They refer to the corridor and the work we're doing there. They've also referred to Sierra Leone, and of course now we're starting to do some work in Nacala Port. So, and there are a few others. Kucha, unfortunately, we've spoken about for a long time. That needs to get traction as well. So those are the kind of base capex.
Yeah.
Right. Any more questions? Have we answered everything clearly? Right. If there are no more questions, nothing on the telephone? No. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this morning. There will be coffee and tea outside if you'd like to continue discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.